Hello and welcome to another episode of Happy Whore Time. I am Tim Murdoch.
And I am Matt Emmert, and we are coming at you post-Halloween, post my birthday. Everything fun in the year is over, Tim.
I know. 2021 with a bust.
No, I had actually, it's been a great couple of weeks. I know our last movie review episode came out on Halloween, but we recorded it like a little bit before that. So since then, I had my big Halloween party. What'd you think, Tim?
It was fun. And you know what? My costume hurt my body.
It was amazing. So just to set some limits here, it wasn't like a huge rager. Obviously, we're still in COVID times, so it was a much scaled down version of the party I usually have. I have been having a Halloween party every year for like almost 20 years, and usually there's a ton of people. Made it scaled down, but still was a lot of fun.
It was just like Kim and Kanye.
It was just like a few of my closest friends. We had the
Rita.
Entire Kardashian
family. I love a Kardashian.
Every housewife, you know, just a few people, just some close friends,
right,
you know.
Right.
Tim was dressed. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that your costume was the best of the party.
Matt.
Really, Tim was dressed as Mary Lou from Hello Mary Lou, It's Prom Night 2.
That's right. Thank you.
AKA, he was dressed in drag wearing a prom dress.
Well, I wasn't doing drag.
I mean, isn't when you dress in a, makeup and a dress, and it was great.
I guess my makeup was not exaggerated. It was literally.
Okay, so I guess then it was just you were dressing cross-gender then.
Well, but not even that.
Mary Lou's not female?
She is. She is, yes. No, but Dean did my makeup. Shout out to Dean.
Yes. Dean, how do you pronounce Dean's last name? Or maybe, I guess.
I'm not
either way,
attempt that.
Dean is a listener who's become a friend of ours and is a makeup artist and did an incredible job on Tim and his own makeup for the party.
Yeah.
Now I know where I'm going to get my makeup for next year.
Dean.
Yes. Well, I actually didn't wear makeup. I was.
You needed it.
I wore a half mask. I was a Prince of Darkness. So I had this like cult leader's robe with a pentagram on it. And I had these huge exaggerated devil horns on this half mask.
Were you mask for mask?
I was mask for Mary Lou. Mask for Mary Lou. Love how I'm like, you dress cross-gender. Well, not really. Who's Mary Lou?
Drag to me is exaggerated makeup.
You're right. It's not just dressing. Yes, I totally agree. I totally agree. But either way, you looked fabulous.
Thank you, Matt.
My favorite part was my parents were visiting and my sister, brother-in-law, and 7-year-old nephew. And they all were at the party, which I absolutely love because they know how important it is to me. And my dad didn't recognize Tim for probably the first half hour he was there. And then finally I said, like, oh, what do you think of Tim's costume? He's like, oh, my God, I didn't even know that
your
was
mom,
Tim.
Your mom didn't know it was me either.
I mean, Tim was, and we'll have to post, or I think, did we post a picture? I thought we
Maybe.
Did. We'll post a picture if we haven't on the Happy Horror Time website. But it was, the party was Saturday the 30th, and it was a lot of fun. And we decorated the house
Matt's
big
house
time.
Matt's house looked amazing. He does a bang-up job.
You did a bang-up job, Mrs. Loomis.
Matt's quoting Scream 2.
Definitely, yeah. So we had Halloween, and then my birthday was on the 6th, so that was fun.
That's right. Matt's boyfriend, Jacob, thought of axe throwing.
Well, apparently it was my friend Andrea's idea.
Andrea.
But Jacob helped put everything together and organize it. It was a great idea. I got to say, if anybody out there has not been axe throwing, which I would assume is most people, it is so much more fun than I ever imagined.
Me too. I'm not going to lie. When I first heard it, I was like,
I'm not going to lie. When I first heard it, I was like, okay, it's different, but like whatever. It was so much fun. They coach you through it. We all got like pretty good at it by the end.
I didn't think, who was the first person? I think
you and I were the only ones who got bullseyes with the big axe.
That's
but
right.
Tim did on his first throw, which was crazy.
I'm a killer.
Tim's like, yeah, I know. Tim's like, it was all those Friday the 13th movies.
No, honestly, it was.
It was. You do a little research. You write. Wait, what is
the
that from?
2009 Friday the 13th.
You take
remember?
A few notes. You do. Yeah. You start by throwing these little axes, and you have to get used to like having to get it into the board
that's right.
And then at the end they let you throw this huge axe. So actually, shout out to, it's called LA Axe, so it's the letters LAA Axe. It's in North Hollywood, really fun. The instructors there were so cool. It was just like you can have drinks there. They only let you have three because they don't want people that are drunk throwing axes. Yeah. But it was just so much fun. So it was
I totally agree. I would actually, and when they actually mentioned joining a league, I was like, I'd consider it.
Me too. And multiple friends of mine were talking about, like, we're joking and stuff, but hey, if we did kickball for 5 years, I think we can do axe throwing for 500 years.
Well, real quick, and we'll wrap this up about axe throwing, but I will say using one hand is better. That's what she said.
I will agree with him. When you can use two hands, and but here's what I learned about it. It's not about how quickly or how much energy you put or force behind the axe. It's almost like darts in that you just have to kind of toss it and it will land in the thing. You're laughing at me saying toss it.
Everything you're saying is
hilarious. I know sexual innuendos ever, but truthfully, like, I thought I had to like put all my might behind it then it would never land.
Well, I think it's the axe instructor. He's a big guy. So you just want to emulate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Tim. Emulate. That's a good word.
You have
word.
To emulate what they do, and I tried to do that, but I was just like, "Listen, that ain't working for me. I'm just gonna throw it one hand, very femininely."
And it worked. And let me just say, the feminine one-handed throw worked.
It did. I was like, "Listen, I gotta hit my target."
I got. it really is fun, and it's a fun thing to do, like with a group. You trade off. It was like two people at a time.
It's better to do it with a group than by yourself.
That would be really weird. Oh, you are on. Look at Tim. Little innocent Tim is Mr. Sex today.
Look who I hang out with.
I am the...
I don't know why you're coming off as censored right now.
I am totally innocent. I don't cuss, Tim. All right. So it's been a good couple weeks, and we're just coming off of a big month of interviews.
October.
That was the most interviews in a row that we'd ever released, but I hope anybody who listened to all of our all October, all Halloween month of interviews enjoyed it. We had a lot of fun with it.
Totally. I had a great time.
We just had so much fun talking to these people from my favorite franchise and one of your favorite franchises.
Yes, Friday 13th is my favorite, but I love Halloween.
Yeah, and it just was so cool to talk to some of these people from the Halloween movies, which I've seen a million times. So shout out to Anna Alicia, Stacey Nelkin, Marianne Hagen, Wendy Foxworth. They all were amazing guests. And also, I just wanted to do a quick shout out, Tim, because we've had some, you know, especially we post on Instagram and Twitter, but we get a lot of comments on Instagram, and there's some people who have been really supportive, especially over the last month, and just want to shout out their names just because they've been so nice and supportive and, you know, want to share the love. I'm here for the Booze podcast. They do a podcast, and they've been really supportive. Where's the other podcast? Oh, a few people that have been really supportive are Tom Vert. Who is actually, his name is Tom Virtuoso, but I'm looking at his Instagram handle. Merman Christian, which has an awesome site. An awesome page. He's been really, really supportive.
Beefcakes.
Beefcakes of Horror has been Blockbusted Videos, which is awesome.
Very
awesome
clever.
Name. Just been really, really supportive and just nice and stuff. And Ray the Unusual, Raymond Paul Leslie, and
Leslie
like,
Jordan.
Leslie Jordan's been so supportive. No, so thank you. We really appreciate like all the comments and the love. It really makes us feel good about what we're doing, so
yes,
we appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you. It brightens up my day.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And just having the stars that we interview, like, reposting the posts and stuff, where it just means a lot to us. So thank you.
Better than winning an Oscar.
Better than winning. Who needs an Oscar when
Not
you can do
me.
A podcast?
I got Oscar Mayer.
Because you like those little wieners. You know what I'm saying? I'm back, everyone.
I know, you're disgusting.
I'm back. Okay, and we are back to talk about two new-ish movies.
Films.
Well, two movies that came out at the very, very end of October, like October 29th. And since this is the first movie review episode we've done in November, we wanted to cover two movies. And we're going to start with one that got a wide release and is in theaters right now. And it is called, Tim...
Last Night in Soho.
It was funny.
I almost said no.
I asked him what Soho stood for, and what did you say?
I don't even remember.
I think he said, like, hey, Soho, or something. It's like, no.
It was hilarious, right?
If you are in New York, it means south of Houston Street.
Soho is the name of a restaurant, right, or something?
Probably, but well, it's the name of an area in Manhattan, but also, I guess, in London. I didn't know. I don't know if there's a.
Well,
house
I learned a lot from the movie we just saw. It takes place in London.
It does take place in London, and so if you have seen any trailers for it, it looks like, you know, slightly supernatural, slightly artistic, not your mainstream type of horror movie.
It has a Nightmare on Elm Street element to it.
Yeah, and it's directed by Edgar Wright, who, if you've seen Baby Driver, he wrote and directed that. He directed Shaun of the Dead. He also directed a movie called The World's End. And he has a sort of style. I'm also trying to.
It was the movie moved. I mean, I guess it was 2 hours, but I felt
it was
like,
yeah, it was an hour and 56 minutes. So yikes. It is not a short movie.
Get a big Coke.
Yes, I know. I did that. He also big movie that Edgar Wright directed, which is going to explain the style in this, is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And did you ever see that movie?
No, I'm sure it's fine.
It's very like fantastical, but like there's just a lot going on visually and everything. But anyway, so just to kind of talk about the plot, like it starts with this girl named Eloise, who
played by Thomasin McKenzie,
who was in
Old.
I didn't even know until Tim told me, but I swear she looks like Beverly Mitchell from Seventh Heaven.
Yes, from Saw 2, you mean?
Seventh Heaven and Saw 2, yes. The movie does start in a weird, it almost looks like a musical. She's like dancing around, blah, blah, and you quickly realize that she's obsessed with the 60s, as in the 1960s. And if you're watching this movie, the very beginning, I thought it was
took place in the 60s. What's your favorite year in the 60s?
1969.
You're disgusting.
You knew that was coming. Did you think at the beginning that it was took place in the 60s?
No, because she had a cell phone right off the
bat. Oh, I didn't see. Yeah. I don't think I spotted that. But anyway, she is just dancing around. She loves like the 60s and her room is decked out. And you quickly realize
I guess I did think it was the 60s.
Yeah, I did until she gets a letter. She got accepted to fashion school in London and she lives with her grandma because you quickly realize that her mom died. Her mom's not around anymore.
And we don't find out. Do we find out right then and there? Why?
Not right then and there, but you do find out right at the beginning that she has some like ability to either see ghosts or like see things, because first she's seeing her mom's reflection in the mirror. Then her grandma alludes to, you know, are you seeing her again?
Like you have the gift.
Yeah, like you have a gift. Like, so either she's psychic or she has some sort of supernatural ability where she can see ghosts or see her mom. But apparently you also find out early that her mom had some mental illness, and you know, so the grandma's very protective. Like, are you sure you want to go to London? Can you handle
what's
it?
What's the alternative to hang out in that old lady's house?
Well, I mean, she was a sweet old lady.
I'm just saying.
So this is the best. So before any horror type scenario happens, like she moves to London and right away she meets her wonderful roommate.
Oh my God.
Jocasta.
Jocasta's trying to be like Cher and just have like one name. And she's very competitive because the only thing that they have in common is that they both have dead moms.
Yes. And Jocasta is like, you know, just bully,
just the worst.
Bully, entitled.
But I
just
liked her.
Imagine annoying, entitled, bullying, thinks she's such hot shit type of girl. So, of course, she's behind Eloise's back, making fun of her, making fun of everything. Just
and
the
rightfully
worst.
So, because she talked like this.
I will say, I could have dealt, would have loved some subtitles during sub scenes.
Oh my gosh, because A, they're talking London.
You mean British accent? They're talking London.
They talk in London.
Is that
and
like
I
when you're
like,
saying, hey, speak American? That's what that
right.
sounds like.
I know, that was not no, very politically
she
correct.
She does
to me.
Have a thick British accent, but she also does talk
so
very
you
soft.
You get British and you get baby talk mixed. So it's baby
so
British.
British plus baby talk equals?
Her name is Thomasin McKenzie.
I like how you looked again. Yes. So anyway, so in London right away, like
she's not gelling with the other kids.
She isn't. So she finds her own place and she moves into the upstairs room in this older woman's place. And right away, she loves it because the room looks like it's from the 60s. Like, it has not been kept up. I mean, it's nice, but it's very old-fashioned. Has a old-fashioned phone, everything. And, of course, this girl loves it. She has a record player.
She's like, I'll take it.
She's like, I'll take that 1960s room. Now I sound, suddenly I sound like some old woman now.
I know. Now you look.
Norman.
Norman, put me down in the cellar, Norman.
Now I sound like Mrs. Bates. Okay. So, anyway, she moves in his. And right from the bat, there the soundtrack for this movie, especially if you love like 60s and like music, amazing. Just constantly playing them. And so she's going to fashion school and stuff. She's a little bit of an outsider, but right away, every night when she goes to bed, she puts
the covers over her, and she literally is transported to 1960.
Yes,
and you think it's like a dream, and then you kind of catch on that like.
She's having visions, yeah.
She said, and it's it's the famous girl from Something Gambit.
Okay, it's Anya Taylor-Joy from The Queen's Gambit, who I've got to say, like, I think that Anya Taylor-Joy is beautiful.
She's striking, and I hate to say, like, I'm going to sound like I'm a 90-year-old casting agent, but she is a star. Anytime she's on the screen, you want to see her. Like, there's something
you
about
you sound like one of the American Idol judges.
I know.
You are a star.
She is a star.
Well, she's an incredible actor. Like, I know she was nominated for Queen's Gambit. I don't think she won.
She's in that club, and she's trying to become a singer?
Well, but just to explain, so Eloise, when she dreams, she's seeing she's actually seeing as a mirror image of herself, Anya Taylor-Joy, whose name is Sandy in it.
Right.
And Sandy is in the 1960s going to a club. You're right. She wants to be a singer. She meets like a hot guy agent who like says he's going to introduce her to everyone. And remember, Eloise is kind of viewing this almost as the mirror image of her. So it's done very well because you see like, sometimes you see Eloise living it, and sometimes you see Anya Taylor-Joy, and then you see the other one in the mirror. So it's like, you know, she's seeing this other life.
So each time she wakes up, she's like, okay, like, I'm going to go get my hair just like hers.
Yeah, she becomes obsessed with this girl she's having visions of.
I'm going to go get, like, oh, and then she dropped $375 on a jacket.
Yes, she gets her hair blonded, which I thought she looked good. Well, I mean, like, dyed blonde.
I'm sorry.
like, you're one to tell someone how to speak, bitch. No. She does get her hair dyed blonde.
Yeah.
She starts at fashion school, like, designing the outfit that she sees Sandy wearing.
Again, I know that I just dressed in the 50s.
60s.
But I love... No, Mary Lou was in...
I thought you were talking about the movie. Oh, you're talking about Mary Lou from Prom Night 2.
I loved her dress.
You love fashion from the 50s
I love fashion
and 60s.
From the 60s.
So what you're saying is that you were trapped in the body of a 50s or 60s woman.
Well, okay. Well, then she like also was dating... She had to get in with the guy. She's like, who's the owner of the club?
Oh, you're talking about Sandy.
Sandy.
Well, that was the guy who became kind of like her agent or manager, right?
Well...
Jack.
Jack turned out to be a...
Yeah, Sandy. Pimp. Well, Sandy. Wow, you were jumping ahead.
Wow. I just want to make sure everyone knows.
Oh, Sandy. Sandy is trying to become a singer, and she dates the owner of the club who becomes her manager. But as these visions... As Eloise is getting more obsessed with her and having more visions, like, she realizes that things aren't so great for
like
Sandy.
Each night when she puts the comforter over her face... And she's transported to the 60s. Like, she wants the best for Sandy. And I think the audience wants the best for Sandy. But guess what? Jack, her pimp.
Well, Sandy starts to... Jack starts to turn her basically into a prostitute. And he basically starts telling her, this is how you meet, like, important men, by sleeping with them.
Right. So he's like... Okay, so, like... When the curtain opens, you think that Eloise, is that her name, is going to see her as the singer that she wants to be. But instead, she's like in a sex show.
Well, and that's the thing. And it gets worse and worse. And what I think the movie does really well is it's not like you figure it out without them saying, like, you are a prostitute. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? It's like at no time does she ever say, I'm a prostitute or I'm sleeping with men. But like there's times men are coming into her room. They're leaving her money. There's little things like that. She's looking... like she's giving out a different name to every man. She keeps meeting new people. It's done in more of an artistic way,
which
is cool.
Well, the first time you figure out that it's gone south is when the curtain opens. But then, like, when she is in her bedroom, but it's really Sandy's bedroom. You see the money next to that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no.
And more and more, the thing is, though, the problem is that Eloise starts to have these visions not just at night. She's starting to, like, see different things throughout the day. And what's tough for Eloise is that she's trying to also go to fashion school, but she's, like, freaking out at random things in different places. Everyone's and like, people think she's nuts.
You're crazy.
Yeah,
and
like, in school.
And there's this really sweet guy. I can't remember his name.
His name is John.
John really, really likes her. So he's, like, committed to asking her out, even though she's, like, going bonkers.
Yes, and that's the thing. And at this part of the movie, I didn't know if Eloise was just
losing her
psychic,
mind.
Yeah, or losing her mind. Well, so anyway, it gets to a point where Eloise has a vision of Sandy. Okay, Mariah. has a vision of Sandy in bed with the guy Jack, who was her pimp slash manager, and they're struggling, and you see Jack pull out a knife, and then you think that Sandy gets murdered by him, and Eloise freaks out and is like, oh my god, I had a vision of a murder of a girl in the 60s.
Right, and then things actually escalate on Halloween. Are we going to Halloween?
Well, she goes to the cops. Was that on Halloween or was
no,
it?
No, Halloween's first and then the cops.
Okay, yes. So yeah. Halloween.
So on Halloween, she goes to the hot, I don't know, he's kind of
cute guy John.
Cute guy John that like is tolerating her crazy.
Yes. He must really like her. No, it is because he sees her freaking out at nothing and having weird visions. And he's like, it's
like,
totally
hey,
normal.
You know what?
Let's
I'm going
to
take you to this club.
Let's date.
And then afterwards, you're going to take me back to your place. And
oh, yeah.
That scene was actually the most
That was the scene when she saw the murder. So, I forgot to mention that Eloise has the vision of the murder while she's, like, hooking up with John. So she, like, jumps off the bed, starts, like, screaming, and,
in her vision, she can see there's, like, a mirror on the ceiling, which I think everyone should have.
Exactly. And that's when she sees what she thinks is Sandy's murder.
Right. So the other guy keeps looking up at the ceiling, and there's, like, nothing there.
Yeah. So, again, but apparently he still doesn't think she's crazy.
Yeah, he's like,
still
this
into
is
her.
Fine.
He gets kicked out by the old woman who like is the boarding house, you know, or owns the building. But that's when then the next day she goes to the cops and she tries to say,
which I was like, wow, she's just spilling her guts. And they're like, do you have a history of a mental illness in your family?
I mean, she says it like it's so normal for someone to have a vision 60 years in the past and to witness a murder.
And then she overhears like the cops pretty much making fun of her. So she's like, I am out of here. I'm going to do my own research.
Well,
at the
library. That's the thing. And that's what I was thinking, that I was like, my first thought is that if I thought I saw a vision of something that happened in the past, I would look up to see if there's any reports of it.
Well,
and
I would
she
keep
does.
It to myself.
Well, wouldn't you want to look, but do your own research, as I'm saying. And like, but the thing is she starts to have more and more visions of all of these like ghostly men coming after, and she thinks it's all the men that Sandy had to sleep with as a prostitute. But like, even in the library while she's doing research to try to find out about Sandy's murder and she can't find anything, all these ghostly men are coming after, and you're like, why are they coming
in
after?
In daytime. It's not at nighttime when she pulls the covers over. Like, now she can't control it.
And her crush is, like, witnessing her freaking out all
right.
the time.
So then she grabs a pair of scissors and almost stabs, like, her...
Jocasta.
Her enemy...
Her ex-roommate, yeah.
Right. But that was a good scene. I actually thought she was going to do it.
Too bad, because Jocasta needed it.
She was a raging
bitch.
You owe me a Coke.
I kind of like the name Jocasta, though. There's something
me too,
like
I'm changing
cool.
it. Timothy Jocasta.
I feel like it sounds like Lacoste, your favorite brand of clothing.
It is my favorite. Is, yeah. But I can't afford it. I can't get a $98 polo.
That's a lot of money for a polo.
I know, and I'm so rough on my clothes.
Hey.
That's right.
Anyway, so we get to... So Eloise is convinced she's met this older man who she thinks is the pimp of Sandy's now in the present day, and he's old, and she like accuses him of being this guy and being a murderer, and he's like, what are you talking about? I didn't murder. What are you? And then he gets hit by a car.
Right. And then they flash back to like one scene with Sandy where he was the hottest guy coming onto her.
But he was a cop.
So
it
but
wasn't
she even called
the
him.
Pimp
she was like,
guy.
She goes,
yeah.
You a cop?
Yeah. So anyway, we get to the point where Eloise is just like, finally, she's realizing, I think I've just lost it. I'm going to go home to my grandma. So she talks to her crush, Michael, and she's like, can you come with me? I'm going to get my stuff out of like the old woman's place, and then I'm just going to leave and go back.
So she knocks on the door to the old lady, and the old lady's like, hey, why don't you sit down, have some tea?
Yeah, let's chat for a second. Chat. That's when I knew something's awry. Right.
And then she's like, oh, you have a piece of mail come. Look at the mail. So yeah. Then...
Well, she sees the old woman starts talking, and she said, you know, someone actually did die in that room. It was my former self. And you find out that the old woman who lives downstairs, and it's understood. No, that's Charles in Charge. The old woman is actually Sandy grown up. Sandy was never murdered. And then you see what really happened. Sandy murdered the pimp and then explains that she murdered all of the men she slept with as a prostitute,
and
as
then
a
put
sex
them,
worker,
put
I
them
say.
Underneath the wood in the room.
I don't know where she put the bodies, but basically, you see, and this is the big twist, that yes, Sandy decided, you know what, I am tired of being made to feel this way, and I'm going to take my revenge on all of these men who have like demeaned her.
So she stabs them all, and it's actually very graphic.
It is, and she stabbed Jack, the pimp slash manager. She stabbed like every man who used to sleep with her.
She said, I stabbed him 100 times.
And then Eloise is just like kind of shocked, and then the older Sandy now says, and don't worry, I know you won't tell anybody. And she's like, oh, no, of course I won't. She's like, no, you aren't going to.
Because she just
drugged
her tea.
Drugged her tea. And this is why I want to get to a question in a sec, because she said drugged the tea, and she's like, don't worry, you'll just fall asleep and we'll make it like you killed yourself, because everyone thought you were going to anyway. The rest of the scene proceeds and she never falls asleep.
Well,
so
she didn't finish the tea, remember, she dropped it.
Oh, so that's okay.
So maybe
I was
there
like,
wasn't
why?
Enough poison
that's
to
why I was like,
her?
Why wasn't enough? Well, it would have just put her to sleep, but like she doesn't get put to sleep. Anyway, And there's a knock at the door. Her friend John is coming to check on her. And then the older woman is like, well, shit, I'm going to have to kill him,
right,
too.
So somehow a fire starts.
The Eloise is able to warn Michael. And then there's a part where the old woman you think is going to stab Eloise is going to warn Michael, like, to get out of here. She's going to kill you. She's, like, yelling at him,
oh,
like,
his name's
go,
John.
Go. Oh, sorry. The actor's name is Michael Ajuo?
I knew what you meant, but I was like, wait a second. His name was John.
Yeah, so warn John, sorry. And John gets stabbed once, but just once. And then the old woman is trying to stab her, and Eloise keeps flashing back between the young Sandy, Anya Taylor-Joy, right, and the older woman, and it's really, like, crazy.
I thought it was really cool. It was kind of like a Nightmare on Elm Street. It was, like, the back and forth.
She's seeing her as young, then she's seeing her as old, she's seeing her as young. Finally, Eloise escapes to the room at the top of the stairs, and it's, like, all of the men's demonic spirits are there, and it's kind of weird. They have like a moment because the old woman comes up and says, the men deserved it. And Eloise says, I know, I agree.
And then old Sandy takes a knife to her neck.
She tries to kill herself and says, you should live, get out of here. And Eloise is like, no, come with. And she sees the young Sandy saying, you can't save me, save yourself.
So she sits on the bed and burns up.
Sandy, the old woman, just lets herself burn up in the fire, and Eloise and John get out. And so it's a little weird because I thought she was about to kill her, and then I guess she realized, no, I'll just die.
Right. And then they do like the... I don't think this scene was necessary, but then she had like a fashion show.
Well, it was a flash forward, and you see that now Eloise is... doing her own fashion show at school,
which
and it's all 60s wear based 60s on
with a futuristic
yeah like
twist.
Inspired by Sandy's fashion, right. And like at the very end, like her grandma's there and John's there and they're like, you're doing great. And then at the very end she sees in the mirror
Sandy.
She sees young Anya Taylor-Joy, Sandy, and Sandy winks at her, and that's how it ends.
I loved this movie. I would see it again. I thought it was visually stunning. I felt like I was just, I don't want to say tripping because I'm not a druggie.
You are a druggie.
I'd have never touched the drugs, but alcohol's the drug, so sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it felt like I was having this experience. Like, I was really into it. It was just visually like a good dream.
You know, so I very much enjoyed it. For being a long movie, I was entertained the whole time. There were some things that I thought were a little over the top, but here's the thing, that's I think Edgar Wright's style. It's very like hyper real. And so that's what it was supposed to be. Like, meaning it could have just been, if it wasn't this director, it could have been very straightforward. Girl goes to London, has a few visions, solves what happened in a murder. And did it. But because of his style, he made it like just this big, almost like music and colors, right. and lights will give and a
lot
everything.
Of, a lot of credit to the two leading girls. Like, at first, her voice annoyed the crap out of me.
You can't say shit.
I can't.
Too much.
But, and I think the casting of Sandy was mesmerizing.
Well, yeah, Anya Taylor-Joy is incredible. I, like you, the other girl grew on me. Yes, it was hard to understand her at some parts, but she grew on me.
Baby
and
talk.
She was great. Thomasin McKenzie. She was really good. And what I think is really good is the role really gave her a lot to deal with. Like, I think her role by far was the most demanding, because Anya Taylor-Joy's role was basically like just be like, you know, sexy and powerful and like very sort of,
right.
One note. Not saying she didn't do well, but
the only role I could really play.
Yes. Yeah. But Thomasin McKenzie's role as Eloise was just really demanding, and she did a great job.
Yeah.
I also really enjoyed it. I think a lot of people are going to enjoy it. The people that I think won't is if you're going for some very like straightforward supernatural type of movie.
No,
it's very artistic, it
does get a little muddy.
Well, and it's also, like I said, it's that hyper real style, so it's not like, this isn't Stir of Echoes. Like, it reminded me of Stir of Echoes in that, like, sort of some visions and then you find out what really
Kevin
happened.
Kevin Bacon.
Except for Kevin Bacon. But this is like, if you combine Stir of Echoes with like the biggest Broadway musical, you know,
Hamilton.
With Hamilton.
I hate Hamilton.
Oh, I know. It just was like, but so it's weird to even call it, I would call it like a thriller versus a horror movie, because there's supernatural stuff. There's definitely some slasher stuff with the killers. There's definitely the mystery.
I also, but, like, it made me think like how sucky it would be in London, like as a woman, like just like, what jobs could you have?
Well, I will say one thing I hated was, yeah, I felt like a lot of the women were treated so badly.
Horrible.
In this. Well, Sandy in the 60s, obviously, you know, she was forced into this line of work she didn't want to do. But even when Eloise first arrives in London, like the cab driver's like
hitting
on her.
And she had to like hide.
People at school are just like they every guy is so creepy to the women in this. But I guess, you know, the women get the revenge because she killed all these men,
right.
You know.
She killed 100 men with a butcher knife.
Yeah, exactly. And got away with it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it was a good twist. I didn't figure out until the old woman invited her in the room that something was up with
her. I knew an old Sandy was going to be in the movie.
That she was still alive.
Yes, I
knew. Because you think that she got murdered, but she didn't.
Right. So I knew that at some point she'd be introduced. I thought maybe it was the lady that hired her at the bar, maybe. I was like, is that Sandy?
You're like, is that Sandy? Sandy?
Sandy. Sandy Beach.
I was just going to say Sandy Beach. Who's Sandy? And is this Grease?
You're a total Sandy Beach.
Sandy? Is Sandy's best friend named Shelly?
Oh, man.
Well, yeah. So I think we both pretty much wholeheartedly recommend this, right?
Yeah, I'm going to get the poster, put it on my wall.
And, you know, this is a movie that you have to go to the theaters for, and I think it's worth the trip.
I can't speak for the world. I can't. Don't make me. But I think it would be good on the big screen and the little screen.
Yeah, I think they just didn't want to on demand because there's enough star power behind it. They don't need to. And again, like I said, I think the only people that may not enjoy this are people that are just looking for just like your straightforward supernatural movie versus like a very hyper real type of thing. But I think that it's just different. So I think that people will like, I think people have liked it. I think it just wasn't, I don't know how well it's done the box office. It hasn't done incredibly well.
I mean, it's not beating Halloween Kills.
No, but I mean, that's like going up against a juggernaut, you know, like, I mean.
Juggernaut.
It's just, I think it made, as of November 10th, it's only grossed $8.3 million.
That's not a hit.
It's not a hit, but these artsy movies,
I'm sure it cost a lot of money.
Well, I don't know. The artsy movies are not meant to be like humongous hits. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know. But
and,
I mean,
in our next movie, it can't make money because it's not in the theaters.
Yes. Are we going to the next movie? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to our next movie. We wanted to sometimes, especially since not all movies are back in movie theaters, we like to do sometimes like one theater movie, one streaming, like that. And we found that we had to do this because it is the seventh movie in the Paranormal Activity franchise, which has slowly become one of the biggest horror franchises. It's called Paranormal Activity Next of Kin, and it is streaming on Paramount Plus. So if you have Paramount Plus, you can watch it for free. And so here's the thing.
I got to go to the premiere. I don't want to brag.
Oh, yes.
So someone I know, she's an Australian. She was like, I've got one slot to the premiere, so I got to go.
Which is exactly, thank God that it was only one, because if Tim had two and didn't take me, I would have fucking killed him.
Oh, I would have taken, like, you know, my friend Melissa.
My sister?
Yes, I would have taken your sister.
Hey, can you come from New York out here?
No, I had so much fun and I, you know, had a great time.
Oh, well, okay, so this movie, so here's the thing. This movie is very different from the other Paranormal Activities.
Yes.
Gone is the house haunting, you know, gone is the just using, like, the camera. What I will say right from the beginning, before I even set up the plot, is that what kind of made me like was a little bit jarring in terms of like being a Paranormal Activity movie is that this movie mixes like camcorder found footage stuff with actual like filmed produced scenes,
right,
which was
right.
Weird.
Well, I guess you had a good point. You said to me, like, well, obviously camcorders have been updated so much. And, like, so the quality is so much better. Like,
did I say that?
You did say that.
Oh, but there were some scenes where literally it's filming all of them and you know it's not from a camcorder. Like, it's, like,
but
actual
still,
film
but they
scenes.
Still tried to, like, at the even, at, like, in certain parts, it was, like, footage from like,
I don't
the
there
cops
were some parts
and stuff.
When I think they were just showing, like, a film thing. I could be wrong, but I just, it didn't feel totally
it wasn't
Paranormal
found.
Activity. Yeah, it wasn't total for a found footage. But so the plot of this one, it starts with there's this girl named Margot, and she's doing a documentary on meeting her biological family for the first time because she found out, like, she was left by her mom at a hospital and never met a living relative, and through 23andMe connected with this guy who's from an Amish community.
I want to say his name is Sam.
Samuel, yeah.
He's awkward.
Yes, and she has her cameraman. Margot's cameraman is Chris, and they also meet up with a sound guy named Dale. And the three
Wait,
of
it's
them.
It's her boyfriend, though, right? Chris is?
I don't think so. No, they're just friends.
Are
they're
you
never,
sure?
Yeah, they're never. They never
oh, that's
kiss
right. They
nothing.
Don't.
They're just friends. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I thought yeah. this. Okay, I watched it twice.
I saw it twice too, and they're definitely not. But so anyway, so she's like going to do a documentary on meeting her family for the first time, and they happen to be Amish. So.
And Sam has left the Amish community 7 months prior.
Yes. And so he's the one who kind of takes them to the community. And like, he even says at the beginning, you know, I have to talk to the elder because, like, you know, you're not supposed to have cameras. That's a sin and all that.
Right,
and whatever.
He goes, I'm not even used to being on camera.
I know. And so at the very beginning, when they first arrive in this Amish community, it looks very like stereotypical Amish.
Oh, by the way, it's like winter and oh, it looks freezing.
It looks fucking freezing.
Please don't say
and,
fuck.
you know, you on the wrong podcast if you think I'm not going to be saying fuck.
Oh, Matt.
So at first, the elder, his name is Jacob, doesn't want them to.
Do you know any Jacobs?
Not at all. Not at all. Zero. Doesn't want them to stay there. And they like go back to a hotel. But at the hotel, one of the little boys from the community.
A little Amish boy?
Yes. Like. Follows him there and they return him to the community and suddenly the community's like, you can stay.
But you're missing the big jump scare.
Well, yes, when the little boy appears, they're in the hotel room and they're like looking at the window and like
the
boy
bathroom.
Appears.
He's just like, hi.
I know.
Well, he doesn't say anything, but it made me scared.
Wait, was it the girl from,
yes,
we
like,
do the voice.
One night in,
she's like, last night in Soho to Paranormal Activity, I'm doing it all.
She's like, she goes, there's not a film I'm not
she's
in.
She's like, old, last night
goes,
in Soho.
What are
no,
the people called?
She is not Thomason or whatever. Thomason McKenzie is not in Paranormal Activity.
It's Emily Bader.
Yes, that's who plays Margot.
Yes.
So anyway, they get to stay at the Amish community and things start fairly normal. Although the first night when they
paranormal?
Have dinner, remember when they have dinner and the little kids sing that creepy German
yes,
song?
And they also start banging on the table
yes.
unnecessarily.
Everyone in the Amish community start banging on the table and the girl's just like, yay, this is fun. Right. Like right away, I'm like, I'm out.
Right. This is already nuts.
I also love, by the way, that Dale, the sound guy, gets a haircut, like a Dutch boy haircut.
Yes. And
it looks horrible.
There's also that weirdness, like, what's her name? Emily? Oh, Margo.
No, Margo, yeah.
That's her real name. Margo goes to try to talk to the other Amish girls, and they're like, we can't, we don't want to talk to you.
Oh, but I love there's one scene when Margo talks to one of the Amish girls. She's like, I love your dress. Did you make that? And she's like, no, I got it at Walmart. Do you have TikTok?
Oh, yeah.
That was funny.
Like, they're like, don't forget they try to be...
Like the Amish kids like know about technology but can't use it. So like they're all interested. So I thought that was funny. But I think things start going a little weird because, well, first off, Margo finds this room above where the room they're staying.
Yeah, this is scary. She goes up there by herself with a little camera.
Yes, because she's been hearing sounds up
there. On
the
roof. And the other two guys, I don't know how they slept through her going, wake up, there's something upstairs. They just like...
Oh. Well, that was a later scene.
No,
when they
she does it twice.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm thinking of the time when I won't want to.
I mean, like, they never wake up when she wants
them
to.
Hey, I sleep pretty soundly, too.
I don't. So. I'm like,
you're like a pin drops and you're
like, I'm up.
So Margo goes upstairs, and first she finds in this room like a box with letters from her mom, whose name was Sarah. And she also,
finds like a little closet behind a dresser is a closet. She goes in the closet. That's where she finds the letters.
Okay, yeah. But she found the letters.
And then she hides under the bed.
Well, here's the thing. She hears something, and she hears Jacob the Elder come in, and she doesn't want to be caught that she's, like, snooping around. But there's a creepy scene where Jacob leaves, and then something pushes the bed down over her.
Yeah, down
like,
on the
sits
bed.
Down, but then she puts the camera up, and there's nothing there. So right then, away, it's creepy.
Right. So then she goes to look out the window, and, like, in the reflection of the window is, like, a face.
Yes, and right away, she, like, freaks out. It's like a jump scare, and she shows the guys the next morning. They're like, oh, it's just a reflection.
Yeah,
like no big deal.
You're not seeing what you think you're seeing.
Yeah, right away, okay, things are suspicious. So Margo tries to find out more about her mom. She talks to Jacob, and apparently... the mom was like a free spirit who ended up sleeping with a normal town guy, got pregnant.
Not an Amish person.
And that's not allowed. She's an unwed mother, so they said she would have had to give the baby to a wedded couple, and apparently she left the Amish community because she didn't want to give up her baby.
Right.
And, you know, I think Margo is slowly realizing, like,
something's off here.
Well, something's off, and this community is... Like, they're so old-fashioned. It's like you're, you know, just horrible. And because of them, she got left at a hospital.
I'm trying to remember exactly. At nighttime, do they follow them? Or do they follow... They find a church out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, so what happens is, like, they are... they have this drone camera, and they see that there's a building far away, and few nights they've been seeing some of the Amish people up late, like, going to this building. So they find there's, like, a church a mile away from the Amish community. When they try to go in, Jacob the Elder, like, stops them and said, that's off limits.
Yeah, don't go in there.
Of
and
course,
like,
that means something's going on, and we need to check it out.
Right.
So... Chris and Margo go back, and they go into the church, and first there's like some weird drawings, like demonic drawings
on the
there.
Ground. That should have been the biggest red flag, but they're just like, continue.
Well, that's the thing. Like right away, you know, this Amish community, something's up because there's like a weird, like devilish looking drawing. And then they see underneath this like, I don't know,
it
counter.
Looks like where
table.
You put a baby to get baptized.
Yeah, something like that. Don't ask me, I'm Jewish. I don't fucking know.
I'm not Amish or Jewish.
You're just ish.
I'm just ish.
So
gay-ish.
They find this, it's like a well, like a mine shaft of this like long tunnel going down underground.
And then, and, you know, then Margo has
the
brilliant idea of like, hey, I'm going down there.
Well, they find there's like a harness and a pulley, and Margo, nobody would do this, says, hey, I'm just going to, you know, lower me down.
You know,
I'll just see what's in there.
If my mom gave me up, I guess I'd be curious.
Yeah, but enough to go down some creepy tunnel that you've
never been
down.
I'd go down 10 creepy tunnels.
Would you go down on a...
Gross.
Clean it up, Tim. Anyway, she gets lowered down, which, by the way, as you're watching this, you know, anytime you're being lowered down to a creepy tunnel, that's a bad idea.
And especially in a devil church.
Exactly. And as she's getting to the bottom, she, like, hears these weird, like, animal sounds somewhere. So she's like, pull me up. Yeah, it's like a weird, almost like... bleeding / growling. So she gets pulled up. So they know that something's wrong. And
so then they go like the next night and there's like something going on in the barn.
Oh, yes. And they see that the Amish people like are killing a goat and taking its baby, which is like a two-headed goat.
And then when it's born, they kill it.
And they like beat it to death. So again, something. This is a cult.
Right.
This is not an Amish community.
Is this... So
Well, the guys realize, they realize they can't leave because their battery is
right,
dead.
So they go into town.
Yes, they go into town. But the thing is that the night before they go into town, this is the other night when you can't, when the guys don't wake up. Margo hears something.
Yes.
And this is the big, like, trailer scene, because the door flies open on its own. You hear this growling, and then Margo gets, like, dragged up to the ceiling.
Attacked.
And then it just stops.
So the next morning, they wake up, and, like, all her sheets are bloody.
And she's acting like she's possessed.
Right.
And of course, what do? They're like, we're going to go into town.
Yeah, we need to go into town. So,
so
they get
you
the,
cool? You cool?
You cool with that laying in there in your bloody sheets?
Yeah, you cool? Hey, there's bloody sheets, and you are acting like you're possessed, but, like, we're going
to
go into town.
Yeah, we need to get that battery.
Well, the thing is, that, I mean, I think they realize that's their only way out, and they realize we need to get
but
out of
this. But here's the biggest
community.
Twist. They actually give it away in the trailer. They hop in, they hop back to the Amish place, but they get hitched a ride with the mailman. Mm-hmm. And the mailman goes, he goes, those people aren't Amish.
Yeah, he's like, that's the, it's the Baylor farm. They're like, they're not Amish.
And I was like, and why would they tell us that in the preview? I think it's a great
they did
twist.
Tell us that in the preview. But the thing is that when they get into town, they do a little research on the internet, and they find out that the name of something that was on the church is some like demon person with its like, wait, it was called Amodius. It's a demon that can be trapped inside a woman's body and passed from mother to daughter. So right away you're like, oh shit, Margo just got possessed with this
right.
demon.
Sarah Margo,
like her mom too, or yes. maybe her mom escaped to get away from, but either way, right away, so right away the guys realize, okay, this is a demon cult, we gotta get back to Margo and get the fuck out of here.
Which I mean, it's anyways, it was written by Chris Landon. I love the gay guy. He's great.
Chris Landon, who's written many of the Paranormal Activities and also did Freaky and Happy Death Day, two incredible movies.
And
but
he's cute. I can say
he
that.
He is cute, yeah.
I can say that.
So the guys get back to town, and they are trying to find Margo. She's gone, and Chris goes to the creepy church and lowers himself down into the shaft because he hears Margo like screaming in there, and there's like a woman doing some weird,
this
like...
This actually made me really laugh. So he goes running over to the old lady. He literally knocks her out, wakes up
Margo,
and like they go out, and like then she goes up.
Well, no, and then some demon creature starts running after him, and it looks like a weird, like, half-human, half-beast thing that
alien.
You don't see a lot. It's really creepy, and it's running after them. Of course, they do have a suspenseful part where they're each trying to be, like, you know, hoisted up the pulley to get out of the mineshaft thing. And, like, of course, the creature almost gets Chris.
Well, yeah, that had to build suspense.
And then they're running through the snow trying to get to their car to put the battery in.
And then Dale's waiting for them, and then Dale's like, come on. And they're, like, running in the snow, and then Dale gets eaten.
Well, the demon who got out of the shaft, I guess it can climb.
Apparently.
Yeah, and jumps on Dale and, like, is attacking him. So they're like, oh, my God. Da-da-da-da.
She's screaming. Like, she's still in the fog of being possessed.
I think she, like, was possessed, but then because it didn't stick with her, now it's, like, let out for people or something. So they're hiding in the barn away from this demon.
Right, and then they realize, like, okay, for us to get out of here, Dale, who was just attacked out in the middle of the field, has the keys.
Yes.
So then they have to go back out into this freezing cold and get those keys. They get the keys, run back.
Well, the creature comes after him again. Right. And then suddenly Margo, I guess, realizes, and this is where it takes a weird twist, that the creature is actually her possessed mom.
Oh, that's
that her
right.
mom didn't disappear. Her mom got possessed by this demon and was being kept by this cult. So she says, like, mom, it's me.
Right.
And then she hooks her and kills her own mother, the demon.
Well, you know, you gotta do
what
you
gotta
do.
I mean, she had her, it wasn't her mom anymore, but she, like, you know, stabs her mom and kills the
but, like,
your mom.
Jacob said earlier in the film, he goes, you don't know what you're dealing with. And he goes, if you let that unleash, it can
affect,
be out forever.
It can affect everyone in the community. Meaning, I guess what we're supposed to think is that Sarah or Margo, if the demon had possessed her, or it would have stayed in her, but if you don't stay possessed, it infects everyone in town.
It's a body jumper.
And we see that because Chris and Margo finally get in the car and start trying to drive away, and as they're driving through the town, everyone's going crazy, killing each other. Well, it's mass but, crazy.
And so the police, is that we going to the last scene?
Well, yeah, like, well, but what I love about this scene when they're driving or through, like, first off, all the Amish people, sorry, not Amish, the cult, are attacking each other and attacking the car and, like, you
but
know,
they're still on the property of the Amish.
Yeah.
They're not, like, in town town.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, I shouldn't have said town. I meant
you
their
community.
Sorry, their community, the Amish community. And then they finally escape, and what I think is funny is there's a part where Margot is, like, so hysterical that it reminded me of Marilyn Burns in Texas Chainsaw
oh,
Massacre,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
The ending when she's like...
It also, I mean, I don't know, I'm sure you thought this throughout, is the Midsummer.
Yeah,
I mean,
without as
much
of the
darker.
Yeah, that was well, and Midsummer was more sacrifice versus
Paranormal,
like
this
demon.
Movie's more fun than Midsummer.
Yeah, and
Midsummer's
this one's more
dark.
Demon stuff. But anyway, you think, okay, Chris and Margo escape, cool, like that's good. Well, that's not the end. And then you
okay,
go.
So this is my favorite scene. Okay, so the police come in, so it's like now police footage from inside
yeah.
their car, and oh, and also I guess they have.
They have body cams.
Thank you
yeah.
so much. I was not going to get that. So he walks through the barn and you hear like a baby crying, but it's really Sam
Samuel's like just possessed or something.
But making the sound of a baby?
Yeah, it's really creepy. But he's able to make the cops kill themselves. Like
yeah.
he looks at them and they pull out their gun and shoot themselves.
Which I thought, how clever.
Well, at that point I was like a little, because I'm like, okay, so we went from the demon possessing the mom, Margot kills the mom, to know now it's not just possessing the other Amish people, but it's giving them telekinetic powers. Like,
yeah.
how were they
and
able to get
that,
the guys to shoot
Sam
themselves?
Sam was shirtless in the middle of winter.
Yeah, that everything, it was just mass chaos, but then Sam takes the cop car and just starts driving off,
and
that's how it ends. So you're supposed to think that he's going to be, like,
I
don't know,
the ending.
Coming into town.
Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, what did you think?
Well, since I got to go to the premiere, I don't want to brag.
No.
But the lead actress was sitting right in front of me.
Oh, so you're not going to say any criticism then?
No. I liked it. I really did like it, and I watched it twice. Did I think it was as scary as the other Paranormal Activities? Absolutely not.
I just thought it was okay, and here's why. Maybe
I'm telling Chris Landon.
Maybe if it was, oh, because you guys are so close.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would tell Chris Landon this. Like, I thought the other, first of all, I love Freaky, and I love,
don't worry,
I love
he's
Happy
listening.
Death Day. And the first Paranormal Activity that he worked on, the second one, is my favorite.
Oh,
just
it's
like
the
yours.
Scariest.
Yeah. So he's done an incredible job with the Paranormal series. This one didn't feel like a Paranormal Activity movie. Like, to me, a Paranormal Activity movie is like something, you know, haunting your house. And if maybe that, like, I know a few of the Paranormal Activities have had witches or cults behind it that gets revealed at the end, but this. The whole movie felt like it was more just about a cult.
Right.
Not
in,
like
in
the
a,
ending
Amish
is.
Amish cult.
Yes, an Amish cult and a demon. So I guess a demon is supernatural, but it just didn't feel like to me, some of the scariest Paranormal Activity scenes are like, you know, when the camera's on the rotating fan and you're just waiting to see like one
right.
small thing or a drawer
well,
opens
I think,
or something.
I think because that has already been done, they were trying something new. But
true.
But what they were trying to do was so, I don't want to say it was so far left, but it was like, it was such a turn. Just they might as well just have called it Next of Kin.
Well, that's the thing. I don't fault Christopher Landon or the people who made this movie for trying something new. I don't. You're right. They can't just recycle the same stuff all the time. But
I mean, they can. I would watch
that. And that's the thing, I would too. But sometimes I feel like if you depart too much, then like you said, this could have had a different title and I would have totally thought it had nothing to do with Paranormal
right.
Activity.
Right, so if, I guess if you slap the name Paranormal Activity on...
It gets the equity of yeah. the series. Yeah. No, you're right, and I get that. And again, I didn't not like it. I just kind of am somewhere in the middle. I thought it was okay.
Right, you know, and I mean, I'm glad that they had unknown actors. I mean, like, these people have all worked before, but it's not like, you know, they had, like, a name in it, like...
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, but I think they've always done that, like in the Paranormal Activities.
You have
so that,
to.
Otherwise,
you know,
so
you're just like, I'm watching.
You're like,
a
I'm
movie.
Watching someone act. It's yeah. supposed to be real. The thing is, look, I have loved the Paranormal Activity franchise for years. I think, you know, it's genius. It does so much with so little. You know, it literally, I think it's the most successful found footage series of all time. And it's like, you know, it's the seventh movie. But I guess this one just didn't feel like. all six of them, I have the ones before this, I have ones that are my favorites and ones I don't like as much, but they all feel like Paranormal Activity yeah. movies. This is the first one that just didn't really feel like it for
and
me.
You know, I mean, obviously I was at the premiere.
How many times? Tell us again.
Listen,
were you at the premiere?
I don't want to brag. Hollywood elite.
You are the Hollywood elite.
Well, I know. I didn't want to say it.
Okay. So you were at the premiere.
I was at the premiere and I wasn't scared, but I also watched it at your house and I wasn't scared. So whatever.
That's a problem. I mean, that's a problem because when I would see the Paranormal Activity movies in the theater, like they were terrifying to me. I was on edge the whole time. There are a few, I'll call out a couple scenes where I did feel a lot of suspense. The first time she goes up in that room when the thing sits on the bed, and every time she sets the camera down, you think something's going to jump out. That I loved. I loved that scene. And I liked the first time they were dropped down into the mine shaft because, like, you really are just waiting for something to come up at them and it's going slowly down.
I actually
down.
Felt like there was a lot of missed opportunities in that mine
yeah,
shaft.
Yeah, there could have been a lot of things. But again, it just, I understand they needed something new, but it felt, another thing I missed was, you know how most of them are connected to, in some way? Like they're either connected to Katie in the first one or Mika or the kid. This is the first one that's like, nope, it's our own story.
Like Amish people.
Well, it's like, hey, new girl and new story, no connection. So it's got to be that they just wanted to try something new.
Yeah, and you know what? It worked. Like, it wasn't a complete, ish. Like, it wasn't like Friday 13th Part 5, A New Beginning.
Hey,
it wasn't like Season of the Witch.
Well,
you know
those
what I'm saying?
Two,
like, just
well, they departed from
that's
it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I will say that again, I'm somewhere in the middle. Like I mean, definitely liked Last Night in Soho better. I'm sure you did too. Yeah. But here's the thing. If you have Paramount Plus, you're already getting it for free. So try it out. If you are a diehard Paranormal Activity fan and you're expecting more of that series, you may be disappointed because it's kind of different, you know?
Or if you're a diehard Paranormal Activity fan, just videotape yourself when you sleep and then wake up and
freaky.
Watch it.
First off, that's so funny you say that because the way they have those cameras, even if I knew nothing was going to happen, just watching yourself at
creepy.
Night is so creepy. Yeah. I thought you were going to say, and if you like Die Hard.
If you like Die Hard, write Bruce Willis a fan letter.
Hey, Bruce. How you doing? Still making Die Hard movies? Thanks.
Loved him.
No, I was thinking at the end there'd be some weird connection to like Katie, who's always connected to all the paranormal.
Katie.
I love Katie. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, it was okay. I'm wondering how it would have done if it got a theatrical release.
I'm sure it would have done well. I'm actually really surprised they didn't do that.
I think Paramount bought it and
they're just like, we need something for the Paramount Plus.
It was originally set for a theatrical release in March of 2021, but was delayed due to COVID. And then finally, it was announced it'd be released.
That's
exclusively
a bummer
Paramount.
For the actors. But.
Yeah, no, I guess, especially if you're like worried. It has not received good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, whereas Last Night in Soho has. But you know, again, we don't ever care. Like Tim and I, there's movies that have been reviewed badly that we absolutely love. There's movies that get best reviews that we fucking hate.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if you're making a trip to the movies, definitely see Last Night in Soho. If you're home, you have Paramount Plus and
is it on Peacock?
No, Paramount Plus.
I just wanted to say Peacock.
You just wanted to say Peacock. If you have Paramount Plus and you're okay with it not quite feeling like a Paranormal Activity movie, maybe give it a shot.
Yeah.
That's
I agree with everything you just said.
And by the way, everyone, before we go, I just want to remind you that Tim went to the premiere.
Listen, if you take anything away from this podcast today, Tim, just know that I was rubbing elbows with famous people.
You were rubbing elbows? Were they like, hey,
oh, wait,
dude,
it's rubbing shoulders.
Hey, stop rubbing elbows with me. You're freaking me out.
Yeah, I mean, I love to rub elbows.
Of course. Okay,
rubbing shoulders.
That is it for us. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Have a great evening or afternoon or morning.
Or whenever you're listening. Okay, bye.
Bathtub naked. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. This podcast is hosted by Matt Emmer and myself, Tim Murdoch. It's co-produced by Jacob Randall, who also hosts a great true crime podcast, Crime of Your Life.
Please check out our website, happyhorrortime.com, where you can stream all of our episodes and see all our pretty little episode images. You can also follow our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
We love hearing from our listeners, so if you want to contact us about one of our recent episodes, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com.
If you'd like to support this podcast, please sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/happyhorrortime. Patrons get access to our growing library of bonus episodes where we discuss older horror films, look back at popular franchises, and all kinds of other fun horror stuff.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert. And we hope you have a happy horror time.